Next page is 98-1384, 98-1492, United Indemnity Company versus Stephanie Harden.
To us as being in conflict with Allstate versus Thompson?
Yeah.
That's what the entry of the Court of Appeals says in Appendix A5, entry granting the motion to certify. I noticed in Appendix A12, the footnote in the Court of Appeals opinion says, CIC directs his court to Progressive and so on, where an automobile policy was so on. As neither of these cases are reported cases from the 12th District, they are not controlling any authority. And we find that these cases are factually distinguishable.
Well,
how can, and it's on page A11, they specifically cite Allstate versus Thompson. How can they, in their footnote, say these cases are factually distinguishable and then couple of months later, or a month later, certified to us as being in conflict? These cases really aren't in conflict, are they?
Well, the cases factually are different in that the Allstate case and the Progressive versus Bolin case both involve claims involving automobile accidents. And what the Court of Appeals said in its decision was that this case is more similar to Lamar versus Providence case, which involved a foster child injured in the home of the foster parents and a claim by the mother against the foster, or against the foster parents for the death of that child. And so I think in its decision, the Court of Appeals was trying to say, we reckon those cases are factually distinguishable, but we find Lamar more persuasive to us. However, when you get right down to it, and I think this is where the Court of Appeals is going with the conflict issue, that there is the analysis of the separate and independent nature of a wrongful death claim from the claim by the deceased or the deceased's injuries is their decision in our case is in conflict with our decision, and in fact in conflict with Lamar and to some extent the Bolin case out of Montgomery County. So the issue in this case, which I think is what the Court of Appeals, when it went to certify the conflict, was really looking at for purpose of conflict, is does a wrongful death beneficiary have a claim that is separate and distinct from the claim of the decedent or the decedent's personal interest? Because what the Court of Appeals said, Mark, in the instant case was that because the injury, the personal injury, was to ensure that the exclusionary language of the policy excluded all claims that arise out of that negligent act of the tortfeasor, in this case, the mother of the child.
Yeah, I understand the legal issue involved, and I understand the legal issue that they present. The problem is it's presented here as a certified conflict, and they said they were not in conflict because they were distinguishable. Now, you could have appealed that issue, which you did.
We did.
And what happened to your discretionary appeal?
It's my understanding, and it's a little unclear from the entries, but it was our understanding that the discretionary filing an education with the signs when we filed the notice of certification consolidated.
It was.
So, for our purposes, coming here today, we just in this briefing that the court had granted the discretionary motion for discretionary appeal also.
Maybe that was the...
The Court of Appeals did not unfortunately make a decision, or make a decision explaining why it found conflict. And it didn't fully go through and explain and say, well, we distinguished it before, but now we're saying it's the same. But in fact, they did certify the conflict, and the case was accepted for that being in conflict. But...
If I understand your argument, it was just in relation to it's basically because my client is not insured, they can't be included.
That's the argument because of the decision of this
court. Yeah, I think it was a certain law that said you can't exclude me from coverage of the money.
Well,
that's the opposite. You can't go to the not covered, and therefore, but this is why I call it the logic of your claim is based on contract law.
This is a liability policy. This is not an uninsured motorist policy. This is a liability policy where Stephanie Martin purchased the homeowner's policy instead. And the insurance company said, we will defend and indemnify you against any claim by any person that arises out of the bottom of an occurrence that is covered by this policy. An occurrence is defined in the policy basically as an accident that results in bodily injury.
Unless it happens to you or your own.
Correct. And so you look at the definition in the policy of what is a bodily injury.
So under your interpretation, anyone that has a relationship outside of the home to somebody in the home can ask who they can ask who is covered in the home.
Or wrong from that action.
Not written, but if he's a parent injured, you don't think they can claim.
I don't think they would because of the difference between a wrongful death claim on the decisions of this court and the statute and the claim of the deceased.
Well, father could not recover under the way the policy language is if the child was terribly injured. But if the child died, he can recover.
If, and I have not, I didn't research and fully follow the court's decision to say lawsuit consortium claims as being derivative claims. And would a father, if the child was terribly injured, would the father have a lawsuit consortium claim, which is also a derivative claim? What we did follow and track through the court's decisions in Fremont, Wood v. Shepherd, Fremont Cox, Thompson v. Wing, is this court's consistent holdings, albeit by some divided opinions, that a wrongful death beneficiary has their own separate and distinct claim, and that their claim is caused in, under the terms of the statute, is a result from death.
Even though the underlying insured is not covered.
I think it's analogous to the Prentice Scott case. It's very analogous. In that case, husband and wife are involved in an automobile accident. Wife died. Husband cannot make a claim under the law at that time against for the loss, the wrongful death of his wife because of interspousal immunity, or could not have made a claim for injuries because of interspousal immunity. However, the court went on to say that the wrongful death claim, because it results from death, is a separate and distinct claim. And even though some people who would have a wrongful death claim could recover because of interspousal immunity, others could. And the court in that decision stated that it should not, that the liability for wrongful death under the wrongful death statute is based derived from the tortious act, not the injury to the deceased. And that the statute uses the term that the parents, surviving spouse, and children are presumed to have suffered a loss by reason of death. And that is where you track through the this court's decision, the analysis of the wrongful death statute, and also its interplay, under the uninsured motorist statute, where the legislature requires uninsured motorist coverage to...
So the principle of law you have us right was that insurance companies can exclude negligence within their home to insure themselves, right?
That's correct.
Buy insurance because you don't want someone outside getting injured by not you do. But if you do stop inside your home, you know,
I think the court has upheld those exclusions on the basis of concerns about familial harmony, fraud, those sorts of things.
And the principle of law you want to write says, while those exclusions are valid and that sure is not covered by anybody in the home, now the grandmother, the father, the aunt, the uncle, the sister, the brothers who aren't living in the home, however, can all be covered.
I think that those, that's for the court to determine what is the scope of derivative claims if there is not a debt. However, the wrongful death statute talks about the claim is a claim resulting from the death, and that those people are presumed to have suffered their own loss.
But there has to be some contract right to recover to them a right.
Well, there is a contract right if it's clearly done.
I said
the exclusion in this case excludes coverage for injury to an insured. And what the Court of Appeals said is that because the physical injury occurred to an insured, then all claims that arise from that injury are excluded. What we're saying is that Mr. Martin, as a non-insured, has his own claim that arises from the death. And that claim is a bodily injury under the terms of the statute, under the terms of the policy, and he does not fall within the class of insurance.
Yes.
He has a bodily injury that is covered, for which there is coverage under the policy.
What is his bodily injury? I guess that's wrong.
His bodily injury or his kind of negligence. Of the child.
We all agree he was not injured at all.
Sure. He was not injured.
He suffered no what we call bodily injury, physical. Yeah. Okay.
However, under 2025, which is the wrongful death statute, right, all of the losses that a parent is presumed to have suffered by reason of the death of their child, those are the injuries he suffered.
Are those injuries to his body? I guess that's what the chief is saying. From the wrongful death statute,
they don't seem to fit.
Are they injuries to his body?
What bodily injury?
I guess to call your attention back to, I think it's Woodward and Shepherd, looking at the uninsured motorist statute that says that uninsured motorist coverage has to be offered for bodily injury, illness or disease, including death resulting therefrom. And in Woodward versus Shepherd, the court said very clearly that obviously includes a wrongful death claim, and it prevented the insurance company in that case from using policy language that excluded coverage for death if you were not an insured under the policy.
Well, the theory of that is that the theory of that is that the obviously wrongful death is the ultimate personal injury. But that's specifically provided under liability and uninsured and underinsured coverage in an automobile policy. Isn't a homeowner's policy different?
The problem is, and where I draw the analogy is, the language of the coverage that the wrongful or the UM policy or statute requires is virtually identical to the definition of bodily injury in this policy.
Wasn't the language in this policy that bodily injury includes required care, loss of services, and death resulting from the bodily injury. Isn't that where you're going with this?
That is the exact language, and that is the, also the language that's in the UM statute. Those phrases. And I don't think the insurance company actually sits around and makes those definitions. I think they look at the statute for all those words. And that's, if you look at the all of the cases, the Allstate case, the Golden case, and the Lamar case, they all have similar language. They talk about injury, illness, sickness, including death, loss of services. It all tracks back, I think, to the same place. That's where they got this language. And this court has consistently said that language includes wrong set.
Thank you, Mr. Gates. Mr. Krugel.
Good morning, Chief Justice. My name is Steve Vogel, and I represent the appellee, and I apologize for a couple of clerical errors in the...
I wondered about that, because you made your brief a little difficult to read.
It did.
I apologize. You obviously know you need this proofread before the file.
A few of the questions that you've already asked are things I'd like to address at the beginning here to go out of order with my argument. First of all, there has never been a dispute that David Martin, the father, has a wrongful death claim. He has the right to bring that claim at any time because the death is a son. That's not the issue here. The issue is there coverage for that claim? Now, the UM and the UIM statute mandates coverage for those claims. There was no mandate in Ohio for statutory provisions that a homeowner's policy must provide coverage for a wrongful death claim.
Yeah.
And there's a confusion there. It's an apples and oranges kind of mix to try to have both of those things brought in. The UIM, and your decisions in UIM cases are interpreting what the statute mandates.
In a wrongful death case,
the statute provides that relatives who have a loss of services claim can make that claim.
They are the injured
party. They're the injured party. Under the homeowner's policy, though,
is that a personal injury?
I believe it is personal injury, yes. However, under the definition of under the homeowner's policy, bodily injury, and I beg to differ with some of the banter was going on about that. Under our definition, bodily injury means bodily harm, sickness, or disease, period. So your coverage would be
sort of a personal injury, but not a bodily distinction.
Well, the distinction I would make is that it is an injury that is a consortium, essentially a derivative claim that runs out of the injury to the party that died.
And isn't that the injured party, the party that died of their wrongful death?
Yes, it is. And it's the claims. I'm sorry. Again,
I thought in a wrongful death case, the injury was to the survivors.
The survivors have a claim to make. The injury is the injury to the deceased. And again, in our policy, I think it's important to know the language in our policy. Our policy is distinguishable from the Allstate policy. And the Allstate policy provided that loss of services was included bodily injury. If you read that definition, it includes it as a bodily injury. In our policy, bodily injury is bodily harm, sickness, or disease, period. Your coverage includes required care, loss of services, and death resulting from a bodily injury. Now, in order to interpret the policy, you have to look to see if there's any exclusions that apply. And the exclusions that were applied, and this is obviously discussed a little bit, is the death or the injury insurance. That takes it out of
not an occurrence.
Bodily injury. Bodily injury to an insured.
Bodily injury to an insured.
Because when we throw around injury, you know, you're back into the statute, which wrongful death statute, arguably the parents are injured by the death
but
of their child.
But they have not received a bodily injury.
Right. That's why that word probably is key to your argument.
Mm-hmm. And in this instance, what the appellant would have you believe is that because Mr. Martin has a claim under the statute to make, that he also is an injured party. Under our definition, he's not received a bodily injury. And so there's no occurrence under the policy for Mr. Martin's claims. His claims derive solely from the injury and death of his son.
But he is injured thereby, you would concede. That's just
I would concede that the statute provided he has a claim to make, yes.
For, obviously, for what? For injury?
For lawful services, for what we consider consortium.
Okay. The verb injured can be, I guess you could apply it.
But it's not a bodily injury, it's defined under the policy.
Okay.
And if there is no occurrence, that's
under your definition, what's excluded under the policy? If your wife happened to be at this insured premise and fell down and defected the stairs, and bodily injury, would you have a claim that is covered in the policy? That is, would the homeowner be insured for your
Is it my homeowner?
No. It's this person, this phone that we're talking about in this case, but it's your wife that's there who's unconnected to this family relationship whatsoever. She falls down the stairs, she's injured. She has bodily injury. You have presumably a loss of consortium.
Yes, sir.
Is that covered or is that excluded?
That covered. And because there's no exclusion. There's no exclusion to the injury to my wife. And that's where my claim derives its justice. But in this instance...
She wasn't an insured.
She wasn't an insured.
She's not excluded thereby. That's your point.
Yeah, and the point is, just because there is a claim, a legally recognized claim, does not mean there's coverage for that claim. It's well held policy in the state that if the terms are clear and unambiguous of a contract, an insurance contract, then the court is not permitted to engage in construction of that, or reconstruction, essentially, if you want to say that, of that policy. I'd like to talk about the wrongful death case a little bit, in that again, Kremsby Cox interpreted the UIM statute as it applies to intrafamilial relationship, and that was the old interspousal immunity. It has no application here. Again, Wood v. Shepherd, although it was overturned by the Savoy case, also was interpreting the UIM statute and has no application here. Wing v. Thompson talks about the right to bring a wrongful death claim after a jury has made a decision before the injured party was deceased or just died. And after she died, this court decided that her state still had the right to bring a wrongful death claim. We have never disputed Mr. Martin's right to bring a wrongful death claim. What we dispute is under the clear and unambiguous terms of this contract, there is no coverage for that.
Thank you.
On that issue, I was waiting till you finish with your main argument to get to the procedural matter. Fact is that the language in this policy is precise and different, is it not, from that in the Allstate policy?
Exactly.
Where they say it's in conflict.
And Allstate itself said it wasn't in conflict with Poland. And
they cite
that. Decision that is factually similar to this case, and the policy language is similar in that it holds that a bodily injury and loss of services has to result from a bodily injury. And that court held there was no bodily injury to which or for which the policy responded in the Lamar case. Again, we respectfully ask this court to review the trial decision and the appellate decision, and to uphold those decisions, we feel the contract is fair and unambiguous, and it's not like coverage for the wrong that thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Use your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Your Honor, it's unusual that my opposing counsel admits that if this person who was injured or this doctor was not insured, this would be a bodily injury. And yet then he tries to say that this is not a bodily injury under the policy's definition of bodily injury. This is in fact, and this court has consistently interpreted similar language, that a wrongful death claim is a bodily injury under this type of language, and the exclusion only applies to bodily injury to an insurer.
So I'm interested in your argument for that. How do you try this case in terms of the damages? General in a wrongful death case, every family member who's listed in the state claims at all.
I think, first of all, at trial, the trial court would properly exclude any testimony about any injury suffered by Stephen Martin or David Martin or Ricky Martin, the other surviving boy, because they are insured under the policy. And so it would be up to the jury to only hear the testimony from those people who do have claims that are not included.
You would agree the jury would be instructed that probably that you somehow strike out.
And also, I believe
the deal of
I think the jury would have to be limited in the type of evidence it could consider. I also think when it gets to apportionment at the time of the probate court, I think that, again, those people who are excluded by the terms of coverage would not be permitted to share in any recovery that might be generated.
Isn't your trial a wrongful death trial where the jury doesn't hear about coverage? That's not an issue for the jury. You have to make a claim and recover against the wrongful party before you can then go after insurance coverage. And that's part of one. So your trial is really, was it a wrongful death and what are the damages? And then once the jury gets the damages, you go to the stage two and seek your coverage.
But I do think it would be, even though that is true, I do think it would be appropriate for the trial court to exclude Stephanie Martin from getting on the stand and testifying about her grief and her suffering that she has incurred as a result by reason of this death.
Only because of the wrong death, she would be liable. Not because she's dead, but she would be liable. Okay. You're not trying an insurance case to a jury, correct?
That's correct.
You're trying a wrong death case to a jury, and if you get coverage, if you get reward of damages, if they find you liable, and you get then reward of damages, that's when you then give her the litigation paying and she doesn't pay up, so you have to coverage
and theoretically even the insurance company could raise an objection and enforcement action.
Right. There's no way the insurance company gets involved in a trial and says,
That's true, but the court would give instructions about personal liability, title to recover. Well, they would tell the jury that Mrs. Markson, because she's the person responsible, can't recover for her loss. Thank you.
Thank you. Engage, case submitted, you'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take 3 steps.
All right.